Russia's election campaign enters its final week, and a new ceasefire is set to go into effect in Syria. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories we expect to make news this week. My name's Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFERL, and joining me in the studio is senior RFERL editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Brian.
So, in less than a week, Russians go to the polls to elect a new state Duma, as well as regional legislatures across the country. The elections take place with the economy struggling and with the patriotic fervor over the annexation of Crimea fading and with United Russia's numbers tanking. But nevertheless, few doubt that the Kremlin will be able to use administrative resources to get the results they need. But as I've said before, Russian elections are not just about the results. They're legitimization rituals in which the optics, the political theater, are vital. In fact, they are the most vital factor, I would argue. When the Kremlin can put on a good show and get the results they want, as they did back in 2007, the elections are a success. But when they're forced to resort to the cruder methods of falsification, the ballot stuffing and the carousel voting, as was the case in 2011, the result is a disaster. There's also another thing hanging over this election, the fact that it will also be held in the annexed Crimean Peninsula, which in the eyes of some will call into question the very legitimacy of the incoming Duma. Steve, what are your thoughts going into Sunday's vote?
Brian, I mean, I don't think it's going to look like a disaster, probably, for the Kremlin.
Nor do I, actually.
You know, I think there's obviously pressure on authorities in the regions to avoid at least very visible methods of falsification.
But at the same time, to get the result the Kremlin wants.
Well, exactly. We had a story the other day about the governor in Samara he's not running, but he's casting the vote as a choice between United Russia and the CIA, basically. Mm-hmm. It sort of gives a look at how, you know, that's the dilemma. How do you get decent results without obvious falsifications? So I think, the Kremlin will get enough of what they want in terms of they're going to have the single mandate districts. So that's going to allow, that kind of creates a veneer, at least for Russians, of, you know, of a little bit more democracy than last time, perhaps, without sacrificing, without hurting United Russia's result. Probably may help it. Because if people are going to go to other parties, you know, whether the systemic opposition, the communists or LDPR or A Just Russia, instead they can, you know, not instead, but they can vote for the single mandate candidate who's then going to support the government and support United Russia and support Putin. But so I think in the short run, these elections will be sort of, a little bit more of the same. They're kind of preserve the status quo, or preserve the situation as it is now. But what they won't do is address the kind of problems that are building up, which is essentially the economy, and then what happens when Putin, you know, who presumably will run probably in 2018, but you know, what happens when he runs and wins and then becomes kind of a lame duck? So it's sort of like, you know, these issues aren't being addressed for the long term by these elections.
Yeah, I mean, I see a couple of things here. Number one, the system's clearly ossifying. You're going to have probably the same four parties in the Duma, the same four leaders. And how much longer can people look at Zyuganov, Zhirinovsky? It's been the same faces pretty much. So the Duma is almost symbolic of how the system is ossifying. Another issue in terms of the falsification in the regions, it's taking place with all of this pressure on governors. I mean, how many governors have been arrested over the past year? And you never really know if a governor is going to be in good standing or not.
That's right.
From one month to the next. How do you falsify when you're in that kind of a precarious situation? That makes it a lot more difficult. The third thing also is that you're right, the single member constituencies do give the Kremlin a kind of padding to make sure that they get a Duma that they want, but they also can make the Duma less manageable. You're not going to have people that are under this party discipline that you have now. It can make the Duma a lot less manageable because you're going to get people with kind of local parochial interests and local and parochial mafias getting into the mix, which is one of the reasons why I think these rumors about Vyacheslav Volodin becoming the new speaker of the Duma might have some weight to them, because you're going to need somebody like that to manage a Duma like this.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. I agree. I think, you know, whereas these candidates may on the surface or in fact support United Russia, support the government, you know, there is, as you say, a danger, at least a danger for the Kremlin, that they will be more independent. They will even have, you know, represent their constituents, whether that's
mafia
in part it's mafia interest, but it also could even be, you know, actual ordinary citizens,
yeah,
with their interests. So there is a chance that, you know, that there will be a little bit more diversity in terms of just the way legislators act. I also agree with, you know, what you're saying about these kind of an ossified Duma with these candidate the same old guys.
How much longer can I look
at
Zyuganov's face?
I think that's what Putin was doing by appointing Fino and getting rid of Ivanov as his chief of staff. I mean, it's just to get some younger blood in there.
But don't see it in the Duma.
But that's
yet.
Not happening in the Duma yet. I mean, there'll be some new candidates in the single mandate.
Do you expect Parnas to get any seats? They're being challenged in court. They may be pushed out.
Yeah,
of the election.
I think the party that had challenged them has dropped.
Has dropped it. Okay.
So probably.
But do you expect, just for symbolic purposes, for them to give the appearance of some kind of pluralism?
I think one or two powerless deputies. You would expect them to do that. I mean, they've sort of signaled that in a way by kind of allowing some stark things to be said in debates by Parnas and, obviously, that would help the kind of veneer, I think.
Now, the other thing hanging over this is the Crimea question, right? I mean, the Ukrainian government's already raised the issue that these elections are illegitimate. This Duma's going to be illegitimate. You got the question of, are Duma deputies going to be admitted into the Interparliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe or OSCE? Are other parliaments in the world going to cooperate with them when essentially you're having an election on somebody else's territory?
Right. And that's interesting. I mean, in a way, though, it could work against Russia, but it could also work for Russia if these groupings do accept
it's a de facto,
and then you
recognition.
Can say, look, exactly. So that's quite an interesting question.
This will be something to watch after the elections, and something to watch how PACE and how the OSCE's Interparliamentary Assembly and how other Western parliaments deal with this Duma. And it's actually quite important. I addressed it on the Daily Vertical this morning, and I think it's will that de facto legitimization happen? We'll see.
Right.
Another story making news this week. Russia and the United States have agreed to a new ceasefire in Syria that's supposed to go into effect today. What do you think, Steve? Another false start, doomed to failure, or can this one really stick? What are you watching for?
Well, I mean, this war has been going on for more than 5 years, and there are some reasons that you would think that Russia could be ready, sort of, again, or could be ready for a ceasefire and the start of or resumption of talks on a transition. They have the government is in a much better position than it was some time ago in terms of control of the country, and also you have a situation where we're talking about the potential start of negotiations or a transition without the U.S. saying specifically, okay,
Assad
has to go. So this is a point where Russia could say, okay, we want this, or we're ready for this if it happens. And also, Russia could avoid a quagmire, It doesn't look like they're going to start withdrawing anytime soon.
Right.
But just the idea of, well, this can't go on forever.
What's their goal, though? To preserve an Assadistan, basically?
Well, right, exactly. And I think, so they could be ready to sort of deal and have a ceasefire, get the credit for that, get the talks going, and then, but have a Syria where Russia retains a great deal of influence. And at the same time, to some degree at least, this would be kind of the coming to fruition of Russia's idea of working, or at least seeming to be working, with the United States together against terrorism.
The committee to rule
so
the world.
So that's kind of a big deal for Russia. On the other hand, I think they definitely, as before, as in these previous, the ceasefire that didn't work after the Munich conference in February, you know, Russia has several outs. It has several, you know, kind of off-ramps where it can just say, oh, look, no, the West, U.S. failed to separate the rebels, you know, from Islamist groups, or, you know, the ceasefire is just not working, but it's not our fault. So, you know, I think to some degree it's Russia's kind of saying, okay, we're ready for this, but, you know, giving themselves a lot of ways out.
Well, because at the end of the day, there's a basic thing. The status quo right now doesn't suit the U.S., and Russia is okay with the status quo right now.
Yeah, I think it's not, I mean, it's not perfect, because you have sort of the situation in Aleppo that's
right.
But so it's not perfect for Russia, but I think, you know, maybe it's enough. So, but in a way, I think Putin may see it as sort of a no-lose or win-win situation, either you get this big deal and get credit, or, well, you know, it collapses and it's not our fault.
We'll be keeping an eye on it all week to see if this ceasefire sticks. And on that note, we'll wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. You have been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical Podcast. Joining me in the studio has been senior RFERL editor Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.